Okay, Ben, this is our ninth show, talking about Marshall McLuhan, Karl Marx, and Frank Zappa, but in the last show we've tried to move into the present. We may even drop those topics. We'll see if we can. Probably can't. We will try. I wanted to address today, and today in London is Susan Boyle. Are you aware who Susan Boyle is?
No, because, you see, you were kind of aware that I probably wouldn't be, and I'm phobic to the news. I can't stand the news. I can't stand current media, which is strange because I get invited onto Press TV, the Iranian competitor to Al Jazeera. It's a TV station on the internet, and I sit there. I get invited in and spend an hour talking about current affairs, and I avoid current affairs because I think current affairs are a buzz, an infliction given us by a particular set of ideas, a particular set of ways of thinking about things that make us think in that way and separate us off from all the things we could be. And one of the things we could be is responding to somebody who might happen to come from the past, but that doesn't mean we're in the past. We could be very much in the present. So referring things back, you know, saying that somehow one's not in touch because I haven't heard of Booze and Soil, or whoever you're talking about. You know, I'd rather talk about Booze and Soil, you know? So, but maybe you'll need to explain to me a little bit. Is it interesting, Bob? Do you really want to talk about this stuff to me?
Well, I want to talk about how you are required to speak on the media about the present, and you don't are not in tune with the present, which is a revolutionary pose. I agree with that. I've often talked about on my other shows about events. I always say I know nothing about this event, but just based on what you told me, my co-host who gives me the interpretation, I make up a pattern.
I know I'm
just filling in content. Yeah. You're just providing content when you're on that show.
Well, and to give...
content is what we're addicted to.
And to give Press TV its due, because it's Iranian and it's pitched against the American monolith for its own reasons, they like having somebody who, for their own reasons, I mean, I don't agree with the Iranian regime, but they allow me to say what I think about American imperialism, for example. So they're very pleased for me to get on there and say my socialist things. So it's a little place where I can say those things. And that's allowed because of the particular political setup going on there. That's why they let me on.
Because you're part of their meme, and the meme is the virus. And like swine flu is a meme sent out to see who salutes the flag and gets sick. You know, there's no basis for the swine flu, and there's a lot of information about the nonsense of it. But it is a meme.
Well,
you live
see,
within the meme.
Now,
and how do we have a revolution within the meme?
Now, the meme is a central category for you McLuhanites, and...
No, McLuhanite, he didn't say that. I said it.
Okay, you said it.
Meme.
Well,
yeah.
let's explore the meme idea a little more, because you're explaining Press TV and the Iranian politics via a competitive idea of different memes, all kind of, they're all the same thing, competing against each other. But I don't really look at the world like that, because I look at the world in a more materialist way about, well, who's the most wealthy country, who's able, whose ideology is present everywhere, and what are its problems and wrinkles and difficulties. And Iran's interesting because it's been picked out as this rogue nation, but it's also a very lively place where all kinds of things are going on politically, which are unusual. I mean, I have Iranian friends who actually say, well, politics is very boring. You go to Tehran, everything's banned, everything's illegal, but it's really exciting. All sorts of changes happening in that country. So I see it more as freedom to develop the ideas that I've found, say from the past, say from books, but also from experiences that I've had and people that I've talked to, which aren't allowed in conventional media. So I have what I mean is that I have a value judgment in there, whereas your talk of the meme seems to me trying to describe things without putting yourself in it, that you've got a system which is meta. I can understand that everybody's like ants crawling around, and I'm crowing because I'm top of the heap and I'm really clever. But are you that clever, and are you out of the system, and don't you have a point of view, Bob?
If I was what you just described, I wouldn't be clever. But I am clever because I'm not what I describe. Okay? I am pointing out what you are up against. the American meme. And so there's lots of other places that provide the anti-American meme. And you do it in Iranian TV.
Well, absolutely. Okay. But I would say that the anti-American meme, as far as Iran is concerned, would be Islamic fundamentalism and all that stuff. And I'm not saying that when I'm on there. I mean, I'm aware I have a strange relationship to it. That's why I was saying they like it if I criticize America. I am actually free to say things about Iran. And, you know, it's a liberal, open channel. They don't censor you if you want to criticize the current Iranian regime, because of course you're just one talking head on a, you know, round a table, and you're just one person. You're not the official newscaster or anything, so that they can have someone saying disagreeable things to the Iranian authorities on there. But everybody's got a program and a particular set of politics, even if they pretend they haven't. Is that always a meme? I mean, am I a meme, Bob?
You're part of the meme of anti-Americanism. Now, here's the thing. Doesn't matter what you or anybody in the panel says. What would really upset the Iranians and prove that there is a meme that's a living thing that they're interacting with, if the station went off the air and you guys weren't able to be on there, that would upset the people, the Iranians.
Well, I don't think they're all addicted to this particular news channel. I think it's far more the involvement of the country in an international media politics, which explains why the station's funded. I don't think they're all there. I mean, I think you're treating Press TV like 50s TV in America or something. Everybody's addicted to this thing. If only they'd turn off their sets and go into the streets, they'd really experience something. I don't think the power of the media in Iran is like that. I think something very different is going on. I'm talking more about the possibilities of freely expressing various ideas which have been created by the society I live in, but which are unwelcome to the power money structures that I've encountered.
I say that you see, you think the word media refers to television, radio, and satellites and computers. Look at media as anything we make. So the whole Iranian religion is a medium, and it becomes a meme when it's bounced off with all the other memes. And yes, the Iranians, if the TV went off, they can go to their temples and worship and engage in that. All right, so they engage in another meme. I don't see that as revolutionary activity.
But is meme a useful word, or media a useful word, once you generalize it in that way? Because what about describing it this way, that religion is the best way of expressing social tensions within a pre-industrial society? Once you have an industrial society, the real battle is between capital and labor. Therefore, after that, religion becomes a kind of kitsch which gilds various arguments, but you're not getting through to the root of the thing if you explain everything in terms of religion. I think it's ridiculous to talk about the Middle East in terms of a conflict between religions, between Judaism and Islam and Christianity, because one needs to look at the price of oil and the territorial ambitions of various tiny countries which are being manipulated by the big powers. And that my argument would be that there is a historical development towards secular rationality which gets held back by various interests. I'm arguing an Enlightenment version of Marxism. And I think that's far more powerful than this kind of muddling talk, which sounds exciting, about memes and everything's the same and religion's just another media and television's exactly the same as religion. It's not. I mean, how you agree with me about the power of 50s black American music is one thing we really agree on. But that power comes from religion in many ways, that people develop the power of that music by believing in the spirit, which meant people in a room really affecting each other and not caring about a mediation. And that was developed because of that organization of people. Those people went to church and sang in that way and developed a music. And so that's a specific thing. And if you look at the specific history of things, you can start to understand things. Whereas just saying, well, religion's another medium, you know, just throwing these things around, and just seems to me to lift off from the historical reality that we're trying to explain.
You said in your discussion with Michael Tenzer, you defended me. You said, well, what's good about Bob is he does point out what Apple products are doing to us, and we should pay attention to that. That's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about religion and these abstract ideas. I'm talking about material conditions. And the material conditions everybody lives under now is the effect of the digital economy, which is very hard to find. It collapsed, and still people can carry on running a stock market, even though there's no money there. Do you know, May 13th, Obama announced, we have no money. The next day, well, it was a long weekend, so on Tuesday, the market went up. Okay, that's a meme. And it's based on historical structures built out of money, gold, credit, and an electronic transfer.
But wouldn't it be more accurate to call it speculative capitalism? I mean, that would name it historically for a thing that it is. Whereas meme, anything can be a meme. You know, wasn't it some attempt to describe ideas as working like genes?
Yes, Richard Dawkins, the book The Selfish Gene, he coined the word meme in 1976. And it's cultural ideas that are passed on, but even his ideas limited.
Absolutely. And I think the term meme is tainted by his naturalizing of human processes. Because if you talk about an idea, we all know what an idea is. It's something I have in my head, you have in your head, may or may not be true, and we need dialogue to work out what we think. Whereas once you start saying, well, actually, an idea is objective, it comes from outside us and it grows on its own outside humans thinking it. Well, what is an idea outside a human head? It doesn't exist. I mean, humans are required to think ideas. Ideas don't exist outside human heads. That's the definition of an idea.
They don't even exist in human heads. They are products of the material conditions one lives in. They are...
Social being determines consciousness so that our ideas, we can't have ideas which aren't possibilities or suggestions or things in our environment, and all our ideas are produced by the way we live, but our ideas can be go upside down. They can be reactions which choose the opposite. They can make jokes with it. They can miss bits out. They can mix it up. They can do what my daughter Iris does on my show, in which if we read a book before we go into the radio station, what comes out when she speaks is this amazing kind of mix-up of all the things that have gone in, all come out in a different order according to her particular desires, and it all gets mushed up and messed up and used again. Now, that's what I think happens with ideas. Don't think that they are these when you came to England, I said you might like talking to someone in Cambridge who I respect a lot called Ian Paterson, and you went up and talked to him, and he said to you, or maybe he said to me on the phone, but he said, the Marshall McLuhan that Bob Dobbs like is the William Burroughs Marshall McLuhan. And when William Burroughs is a big thing about language is a virus which has sort of invaded our heads, and he kind of hates it because we've got to get to the physical and the real, and the language is terrible. All this time being, you know, probably the best wordsmith that America has produced from the 60s through to the 70s. And, you know, he loves words. Burroughs is words. If there weren't words, Burroughs would be nothing. And yet, he writes his books, which are all against words. You know, we've got to get rid of words, you know, tear it up, you know. And it's a sort of great kind of dialectic for him, because he's insisting that words aren't everything, and that amount allows him to generate even more words. I've lost
Ben,
my thread.
Produce,
Tell
Ben,
me my
you,
thread,
you, you
Bob.
Your
you're good
idea.
At that.
Ben, you produce great content. I enjoy, but I'm trying to keep you on topic.
Social
being
please
determines
do.
Consciousness.
Yeah.
I gotcha. That's it. That's exactly what I'm saying. And social ideas are just afterimages from the technology of speech, and then you bring in later technology. So social being creates consciousness. Let's stick with that.
I agree. But social being is not defined by language. You can is part of social being, but a lot of social being is waking up in the morning and thinking I've got no money.
And social being right now is just us using Skype. That's social being.
Well, here we are using Skype.
Yeah, that's social being, and that's determining our consciousness.
But I can't eat Skype. I can't live on Skype. I mean, I can communicate with it, but it's not giving me a living. In fact, It's selling me things. It was working the other way. It's trying to take money from me, finally. I mean, hello, Skype. I hope you won't block us out because I'm kind of talking about what you do. But Skype exists in order to sell telephone connections, doesn't it? I mean, that's its why it's there. It's to draw people in.
Speculative capitalism is not the appropriate term for the present social being. The social being caused by computers evaporated money. That's why you can't eat right now. Okay?
I don't understand. I mean, money's a representation. It's not food. Money's a representation, right, which allows it. It's a social power that allows me to get some food because I give people money. But it's a convention. It's not the food itself. So I don't understand how, I don't understand what you just said.
Okay, food is an ancient technology.
It's a bit of a modern necessity. What are you living on at the moment? Your water, or what?
Social being is a necessity, okay?
What, everybody social baked beans?
Social food. Any nutritionist can go to China and look at the effects of too much rice on people, or they can go and look at Americans too much burgers. Food is a technology altering our being, and it's an old technology, an old network.
Now, Bob, that would assume some kind of natural being that doesn't eat, that is the real balance thing, and everything else is a distortion.
No. Technology is us, is first nature, is naturalness.
Mm.
Okay, oh, good, I got you. This is a good sign we can bend to stop. Veers off the road. Okay,
right.
Good, we got him. Okay, buddy, put your hands up. We're going to check your wallet. All right, your ID. You got any ID?
No, none at all.
Ground to a halt there. He went, oh, we love that. It's like an orgasm. Okay, we're in the afterglow now. Okay, so Ben. Where do you get you have these unbelievable old-fashioned notions of what I'm talking about. You have cliche responses. Don't you understand that media is being, is us, is nature, is reality? Okay?
Well, no, you see, I'm a...
What are you?
I agree with Marco. He hates me quoting this. He thinks it's really crude, but he said that modern art, and for that, it's a phrase we use for what we really like and what brought us together, you know, realizing that Hendrix is better than Steve Vai. You know, we like modern art. That's what we call...
Who are you talking about?
Marco Maritzi, the guitar player in Lendormin, who lives in Rome. And he said, this modern art we're talking about is immediacy criticizing mediation. That all the modern art that he's really liked is the moment at which you have all the mediations, you have all the agreements and conventions about how things can work and what culture is, and somebody comes and cuts through it all by referring to the immediate. And this is the attraction which the baby view of the world has had for Jesus, had for revolutionaries, and for modern artists. There's always been, well, if you look at things from the baby point of view, beings without all this culture and mediation that we've built up, you get through to a truth that can make everything work again, that can refresh us. And that basic idea, I think, is correct. And
that's Platonic, Ben. That's Platonic. What do you mean you find an essence, a truth?
No, it's not. No, well, Plato didn't think that looking at real things got you anywhere, because he said real things are simply a reflection of the ideas in heaven. So he didn't like looking at specificities, and he didn't like learning from children at all. He had a very repressive view of education.
But what is the truth that we would get to?
Well, what I'm talking about is the energy I like is the confrontation of the mediations that we've worked out to communicate with each other with an immediacy. I mean, you said at the beginning of the show that you wanted to talk about the present. Well, for me, in a way you're talking about that, but saying, well, we're talking on Skype, which is true. Now, the people who are listening to us may be talking to us on having got through to archive.org, where they might have found this program. It might be streamed by Resonance FM radio. It might be a CDR that they've been given. There are many ways in which the words that we're talking could reach somebody. Do all of those things, are they crucial? Are they the main thing? Or is the fact that we're talking about something different. You see, I think you're in fact of my party without knowing it, that you want to confront all this media and experience and cultured way of doing things with your own bodily reactions, that you are a 60s revolutionary who wants to posit your honesty about your internal impulses versus the way everything gets cultivated and refined, that you have that in you, and you kind of forget about it, and then you sort of accuse me of being old-fashioned. But the fact that I can talk to you is actually an agreement about that revolutionary idea.
I agree, and I'm not a 60s revolutionary. I complete the 60s revolution. I complete it. I make it smarter. I make it so we survive it. Okay? So what is today? You wrote an email, capital T-O-D-A-Y. Let's talk about today. I've mentioned the media we're using today. Okay, now what else about today? What is today that we're going to deal with?
Well, growing older and getting very unattracted towards pop music and thinking...
That's your version of today.
Right? Yeah, and as the composer of our theme tune, Evil Dick, said to me, he was writing in a cultural studies environment about academic looking at popular culture, and he said, the people who are teaching me just can't get it. I'm saying the 60s was a blip. You're saying that the quality of 60s pop music was special and different, and they're just saying there is pop music. Is it good? Is it bad? Talking about it like, you know, the Eurythmics and the Rolling Stones are the same thing because they're pop music, and it doesn't matter about the different era that produced them or the different ideas that could be expressed with these vehicles. And I think Evil Dick was absolutely correct. It's not that I'm a 60s revivalist. In fact, I abhor 60s revivalism. But I think to step back and have an objective view of musical quality, you've got to say something occurred in the 60s to music which gave it a philosophical and importance to think about, and affects has an effect on your body which matters. Which doesn't mean that all pop music ever since has always got this quality. It can be recuperated into money-making. It can be turned into something else. And that's why I go on about the 60s and why I try and remember the power of what that thing was. And you want to talk about today, and what I see is, I'm going to be a cantankerous old git. You know, what I see is a massive recuperation of all those things, which the intelligent people and the interesting people recognise. You know, that's how I test anybody, is do they know how much those revolutionary ideas have been turned into their opposite and turned into something offensive and boring and nasty?
What turned them into that? Speculative capitalism?
Well, the loss of the link to social revolution.
To certain older media.
Well, if you want to call money making a certain medium, which for me muddles up, you know, terms in a way that I find confusing. But yes, if you call money making another medium, then certainly that things settle back into a thing where the people who were in control before, the people who've inherited this and live in a certain way, are still pretty much in charge.
And what are they in charge of? Didn't they just go bankrupt?
Well, they went bankrupt, but they form... You see, the playoff between... in the Cold War, between free capitalism and state socialism was a fraud. The state has always bailed out capitalism, had a relationship to capitalism, and the state, the exploitative state, which ended up existing in Russia, in the Soviet Union, had exactly the same thing with the state running a kind of capitalism. So I don't... I see the... you'll have to remind me of how we started this.
We're talking about social being determined consciousness and today. Now, the Russians, yes, they had social backup, but they wouldn't let Elvis in.
Well, yeah. And the
Okay, we're talking about today, Ben, and how you're getting ill.
No, you're feeling old. You're feeling out of touch with the rhythms. You were asking me about
speculative capitalism and older media, and I just want to talk about today, Ben. I didn't get a chance to answer your opening remark that you're feeling old and cantankerous. Well, I don't feel that, because I don't identify totally with my condition responses. I hear new stuff. I like some of it, and I don't like other stuff, whatever the new stuff is. The thing is, that was the way it was for me in the 50s and 60s. I liked some, I didn't like others. I find there's so much good, generally good stuff around, that I don't have to make a choice. And what I like about your show is you play such a diverse variety of jazz, silly stuff from the 60s, and, you know, pop music that you didn't even know was 60s stuff, and all this stuff, the variety, that's what is the wealth of today. So I don't worry about what I like or don't like. If I don't like something, I just go somewhere else and it's right there.
Mm.
But my only policy in relation to money as a medium, the only stuff I bought was Frank Zappa.
Well, me too. I mean,
I bought, Ben. I never bought anything else.
Me
I
too.
Zappa,
And
the rest was all free, and I could enjoy it in clubs and places all over the place. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we still live in that. I mean, the 50s and 60s are here. It's all on YouTube. You can see anything. You see stuff I missed. So I feel younger and younger because I can experience more and more.
Mm.
And there's a lot. I can experience more crap. And I experience more wealth.
Well,
I would never imagine I'm getting older in terms of experience and how I can fill up my time. It's like constant party.
Well, I don't feel I'm getting older. I mean, my cantankerous old git attitude I've had since the age of 9. Definitely.
All right. So we can't use that as a marker of you changing, because you've always been that.
Yeah.
So what's the change then? Let's define more accurately what the change in you
is.
Well,
it's a frustration with false fights. I mean, having been brought up in the Cold War, which was one of the big false fights which divided the world, because this is an answer to where you were saying, well, isn't current capitalism in crisis? I mean, these people have no money. And you see, I don't think it's a very big, it's nothing new for the American government to buy a load of banks to solve some sort of problem within competitive capitalism, even though for the ideologists that's a terrible problem, because we're meant to believe in a pure market, and here's the state, and state is kind of socialist idea, so you can't have that, you know. And I'd say that after the rise of Stalin, Russia had relationships between exploitative capitalism and the state, and that these relationships existed in America with Roosevelt, the New Deal, that these relationships between the state and capitalism have always existed. You don't get capitalism without a state, you don't get a state without capitalism. I mean, these two things have been symbiotic, and I want the freedom to develop ideas and talking to people where I'm not confronted with people saying, yeah, well, which side are you on in the Cold War? You know, now that's gone, so young people listening to this might not understand any of that at all. But I feel the same thing goes on now with these false confrontations about. And I want to get through to the increasing unity of experience globally created by an economic system, and how by recognizing that we could form an actual community and an actual response to it, which is somehow not allowed by all these fake divisions, by these arguments, by these media confrontations between this idea and that idea, which just seem to me complete hocus pocus. You know, I mean, you know, the great confrontation between Islam and capitalism going on, for example. You know, it's
a
joke.
Those are memes. Yeah,
yeah.
Mediated memes is
right.
What you're objecting to.
Now, Bob, when you use meme like that, you're naming something you don't like, aren't you?
No, well anything I like and don't like. Zappa is a meme.
Yeah, but this is your relativism, you see. This is what earlier I was objecting to, because meme comes a way of naming anything, and then, well, I'm a meme too, and we're all memes. It's all like we're little tadpoles all sort of swimming around. And where does that get you, really? You know, for actually taking a position on anything or advising anybody about anything or being a person in the world. You become somebody saying, oh, we're all wriggling tadpoles. Great, Bob, but You know, we're all jostling.
What's the word meme?
We're
all apart. Let's get Prinian.
You know,
me.
Yeah,
it's right in there.
It's me. Yeah. Well, we're all.
The meme is me. And the present mediated society enhances the me in the West, in the spectrum
yeah.
of capitalism.
Okay.
And diminishes the me somewhere else. We're not sure where it is. Maybe it's the pygmies in Africa. Not sure. You know, they got no cornflakes there, we hear. But look, the thing you're worried about is exactly, I'm not worried about it, but I think your criticism is too tiny. I'm way more cantankerous than you, okay? On way more levels. You stay too limited worrying about capitalism and communism, which are memes and structures that are floating among many others. Like, where are we today? It doesn't matter that there was a crisis. It's going to all be bailed out. Okay, good. Well, why worry? You object to what people think is going on in their lives.
I object to the way in which conventional opinion won't let me relate the great experiences I've had and the...
the great the Ben me experiences,
yeah, which I think don't lead to me actually, which collective experiences don't allow me to talk about those and develop those because of the cynicism and reduction to competitiveness, which is assumed to exist by the bourgeois class, but which isn't assumed to exist by the people who are being exploited. And therefore, the meme argument that you have just seems to me another example of reducing everything to competition. And I don't think everything is competition. I think it's survival. I think it's often cooperation and survival under a ludicrously exploitative system. And you say
what's
that...
What's frustrating you from getting cooperative with people?
Well, there's just a huge bank of... media and academia telling us that human life in a pleasurable way is impossible because of some kind of evil itch.
Ben, you live in pleasure day in and day out and you celebrate every week. You're just complaining you don't have a big enough audience.
I don't mind about the audience.
You want more people to hear what you're saying.
I want more people to talk to and I want more discussion and... I want to expand. I want to understand more, and I need to be able to talk to. I mean, it's stupid having
you
get stunted.
You do your radio show.
You get.
Let me speak for a second.
Yeah. Okay.
What's going on? You go on. You always get 90% of this. You get on the radio for an hour. There's an hour you could be talking to someone on the street, but no, you're out there on a show that no one's listening to. Why don't you get back on the street, get off the show, and talk to someone on the street?
Well, because you, in that context, you get cast as, because my ideas are so at variance with society, you're a nutter, and you might be able to convert one person, but it takes so much work, you end up having to be their lover or their brother, or, you know, it's a full-time activity, you know.
Very good point. Now, what is the social being, the mediation that has created that situation?
I'd say it was competitive capitalism sprayed down to a lower area that doesn't really need it. And I call that ideology. I mean, I have a term for what I don't like. I don't call it memes. I call it ideology. I call it the set of ideas which are very useful if you're the head of a firm competing with another firm, which are really stupid if you're a fairly poor guy sort of living next to a load of other poor guys in a tenement. You know, but this idea of, you know, I'm competing with everybody else and everybody else is the problem. And, you know, even though you're not actually on the stock exchange and you're not competing with the other people, it's kind of projected down among everybody because that's the stuff we're getting. And I think interrupting that and fighting that is what Frank Zappa did and what the people I like do and
yeah,
making fun of it.
Yeah, you're citing media images. What are you and I doing, Ben? How are we going to fight this system?
Well, we're part of the media. I mean, obviously we are. We are putting our heads above the parapet. We're not just living everyday life. We're deciding to make statements and be visible and set out our wares in the marketplace, you know. But I don't think
That's not good enough for me. I actually want to win the revolution. I don't want to just be in the marketplace.
Well, absolutely. And I'm not saying that we're doing that in order to, you know, become the next Woolworths or, you know, sell. But I'm saying that we are, I mean, in having engaged in quite a lot of street politics in my life, I mean, you are competing with the other vendors. You know, you go out there with a revolutionary newspaper, you're standing on the street, you're saying, I believe in this, you know, listen to us. You're part of the hustle and bustle. People think you're just selling a newspaper to make money, and you have to explain, well, actually, we're not. You know, all these things are part of putting your head above the parapet. I believe in that. Yeah, yeah, I do. You know, so I'll use any means I can. You know, I'll use Skype or I'll use the radio, or, you know, you get blocked in various ways. You suddenly find you can't write for a music magazine because it's direction, you know, all the rest of it. And I'm sure you've found that. I mean, I'm sure you would like to be more visible than you are. I mean, otherwise, why talk? I mean, you know, there is a certain
I don't worry about being visible, Ben, because I'm actually working with people around the world organizing a new society.
Well, I'm interested to hear that, because I know you quite well, but I wasn't quite aware of that before. I mean, I'm interested that, I mean, I use the word visible, but I'm interested in that we, when we first Skyped, we used camcorders and we saw each other, and we quickly agreed with each other, didn't we, that it was a bit of a distraction.
Yes.
And we didn't really see the point. And some people would be very surprised by that and think, well, I mean, you know, if you can't see the person, you know, that's part of communicating with them. And it made me reflect on some of our root ideas from the debates that James Joyce had with Wyndham Lewis, and which Marshall McLuhan learned from, and the set of ideas about thinking about things in terms of ear and eye and the kind of person that might be, and it made me think, oh yeah, yeah, we are ear people. That visual thing is not all important for us.
Right, and I like to think I'm also the other senses, which I call the tactile, kinetic and tactile, so I don't limit myself to the ear and the eye.
I'm not asking you to limit yourself, I'm asking you to listen to an idea which wants to connect to our not wanting the camcorder on, to the way in which we have our best communications, really, when we're enthusing about music. We see the point of music in the same way. We see what that means. We don't use music as, we're not looking over our shoulder about what other people think about it. We both go, ah, if I hear that, I really like that. We're confident about a musical reaction. And that's something, I do use that as a test of people. And I find it very hard to have any political or social interaction with someone who's frightened of their own responses to music and doesn't really know what they think when you play them a piece of music and kind of go, am I meant to like this? Or is this avant-garde? Or is this pop? You know, that confusion. I was just like, yeah, but what do you like it or not? And that immediate reaction for me is paramount. And I don't want to tie it to the... I tied it a bit earlier to the 60s, and you could tie it to the ear, you could tie it to this or that, but I don't think it should be tied to that, because I think it's a bravery about immediacy, a psychological thing about confrontation with things, which should be the basis of any new politics, because I don't want the politics that bullies you from concepts.
Right. I operate that way, but I try not to impose it on another person. Interpersonally, I impose it on them on my radio show or TV show. Whenever I get on the media, I impose my reality on people and judge them. But interpersonally, if they don't react to something I think is energetic, I don't hold against them. But I know there's limitations, but I keep it open. I don't make a judgment about people too much. You seem to judge people, really make it an issue. I didn't know they might come up with something else.
Well, it's the way I put it. I mean, I hope I don't behave as horribly as you're describing. I mean,
You do, Ben. That's why.
Okay, I do.
Popular.
I do. All right.
Everybody thinks you're a Zappa nut.
Yeah.
I mean, When I tell people I'm working with Ben, they go, that guy's a loony. And I say, no, he isn't. But the thing is there is a reaction to you because they see that you're imposing your personal preferences on people.
Well, I mean, this is one of the huge problems of relating subjective feelings to the objective society, which we've got, which it's considered heretical and offensive to actually talk to someone about your subjective reactions. And I'm asking for a discussion about it. I'm not imposing actually what I think on top of somebody. I'm asking for a dialogue about how they feel when they listen to something. And it seems to me that there is a widespread repression going on because of another idea, another set of arguments. And this set of arguments is that it's all very well for each person to have their own taste because they can go and buy their own records and everybody must respect that. But nobody seems to point out, well, actually this means nobody's able to talk to anybody anymore because everybody's there in their separate niche market consuming what they consume happily, but they're not able to talk to their neighbours because they're consuming something else. And then it makes me wonder, well, what kind of system are they in? All these separated people. And then I have a vision of society as a helpless maggots all kind of squirmingly sucking on little specialised teats that they've been given, and all these maggots are wriggling but they can't actually communicate with each other. So I want to interrupt that by asserting very strongly my own taste in order to start a dialogue with people, in order for them to tell me, well, actually what I'm saying is nonsense because there's somebody that's much better than Frank Zappa who is, and I'm waiting to hear the reply.
Ben, I again agree, but I think you're limiting yourself to a certain vision. Can you adopt other visions of what's happening?
Well, what's happening?
You can't
sorry.
Go out in the street. Or let me just say that you can't go out in the street and talk to anybody. So you want to talk to people. Where are you going to talk to them? They're long gone. I've said this for 20 years. They've evaporated. Yeah, they're all in their own little matrix tubes. So how many people do you need to talk to?
Well, no, but Bob, there are people I can talk to on the street, but it requires a particular structure of politics. I mean, for example, there's a protest about the particular council that we live under here in Camden selling off public housing as a protest on the street. Now, I can go along to that talking on the street, and because of the way in which people have organised it and its approach and what it's criticising, then I can go along and I've got backup of other people and I can go there and be on the street and be myself and talk with anybody about anything, because politically people have moved to an area of confrontation where things are clarified a bit in according to the way I understand things. So it's not like I can't ever talk to anybody on the street. It's just it requires certain movements of other people to create the spaces in which the ideas I want to talk about are visible. I can't do it all on my own. I can't, you know, that idea of like, well, seizing upon anybody and like dumping a load of stuff on them. You have to find the moments which open up some other argument or you know, it's very specific and to do with the local politics of your area.
All right, so you've got to do that. What are you complaining about?
Well, I'm not really.
They only happen every now and then, these protests or movements. So
yeah.
It's the in-between time you're complaining about. These are too few and far between, these gatherings. All this other time is like he has no one to talk to.
I'm complaining about the grinding boredom of everything being dominated by nonsense all the time. I mean, doesn't it get to you?
I don't pay attention to it because there's lots of other good stuff. I don't see any nonsense. I know there's lots over there somewheres, but that's a huge world, and I got my big, huge world.
Well, but your big, huge world, Bob, is sitting on a beach with your laptop, navigating old interviews with Mothers of Invention, looking at, you know, taking photographs of turtles. It's all very sweet, but it's the end of life side of things. It's the end of life retirement.
I'm limited to that.
It's the retirement.
I'm communicating day in, day out, all over the world. I'm on the phone. I've got my whole armies I'm organizing. All kinds of corporate stuff. I work with the richest people in the world. So I'm not just limited to being on the beach.
Okay.
Or sending you the Ray Collins interview. I mean, Jerry sent it to me. I just passed it on.
But the but these richest people in the world, can they really make anything happen?
Well, they're trying to right now. They're a bit concerned. They feel like you, Ben, that there's no one to talk to, and what they like is not being recognized. And they want their history, their life, the records they love talked about, and more people hearing about them. They're worried about the kids don't know what's real. They wish we could get back to the 60s, just like you, Ben.
I don't think it is very like me. I mean, I've never said that the kids aren't real. I mean, the most real thing in my life is my children, you know, and I don't think their reaction to things aren't real. I mean, in fact, what I was saying to you earlier was that modern art credits, and I'm talking about infants rather than teenagers, but the infantile reaction as the real reaction, which should help us criticize the boredom of the cultural stuff we get enmeshed in. So I think I'm on the side of that new reaction.
Well, I can experience boredom, you know, once every 3 years or something, but I have such an involved, active, interactive, fun existence, I don't feel boredom. I understand other people have boredom, but I would ask them to live like me, but they don't want to. See, the phone's ringing, more people phoning.
Yeah, lovely.
Actually, right now, the richest man in the world is calling me, right now.
Well,
there it is,
but
on the phone,
Bob,
I can't answer.
Good.
right now, he's calling.
But you see,
it's there on our show.
But
they're ringing.
Bob, if you had worked out your life as immaculately as my hero Gamma, you'd have been able to pick up the phone then and carry on talking to me and allow them to listen to what you were saying with absolutely no problem. Gamma was once reciting poetry I'd written for him, and when I write poetry, what I write is the most indigestible stream of nonsense that I can possibly write down. And he's reading this stuff out, and the phone rings, and Gamma picks it up, and he goes straight on reading exactly what I've written into the phone. And here is a man without any guilt, without any deals, without any sneaky stuff with anybody. You know, I mean, you could also say he was a powerful man, or, you know, he's somebody who didn't have to apologize about anything going through his head. So he just picked up, he's got a phone call from his mobile, switched it on, and carried on reading out these idiotic language that I put in front of Gamma to get him to read. And you couldn't do that, Bob. So you're telling me...
But I wanted to pay attention to you. I didn't know you had those standards. Let me just tell you that Gamma, who's the person Gamma worships? Me! I am Gamma's role model.
Well,
he sends his incomprehensible emails to me, you know, regularly. Now he's got me on Facebook. He's hooked me up with everybody. I don't know who he's hooked me up with, but he's commenting. Gamma is totally involved with me. I'm
a
role model.
Good. I mean, I just hope people listening to this won't conclude that the particular culture.
I hope they do conclude.
Well, it's just a bunch of egomaniacs, kind of trying to triangulate and negotiate in order to put ourselves on top of a pile of idiots. I mean, it's embarrassing, Bob, to think about things like this.
Yeah, see, look, there you are, worrying about being embarrassed. Am I ever embarrassed? You celebrate Gamma not being embarrassed. I'm not embarrassed by what I say. I'm more Gamma than you. You know, you're bringing in your personal worries, and what are you concerned about?
Well, I'm concerned about how incoherent, incorrect, and untrue the things that are being said on this program are. That's all that worries me. I'm present, Bob. You know.
Well, you're saying most of the untruths because you don't respond quickly enough. You go forward and say a bunch of paragraphs, and then I could say a lot to each five words, and I'm very pleasant about it and let it happen. I'm not criticizing this. I enjoy the fact you're carrying the ball here, but don't think that we're piling up truth here. We're trying to work on a process of mediation of memes to establish how social beings are conditioned by conscience, and Karl Marx was the greatest thinker ever existed. That's what we're trying to establish here.
Yeah, we are. In reality, rather than name-checking.
Yes, and we're trying to apply what he said.
Okay. Well, you know, I can go along with that.
Don't you want to, you keep distracting, I'm not criticizing you, but I am responding to immediately how it seemed. You keep distracting about yourself. I want to know how you can help the revolution today. Without bringing yourself into it. Or, you know, I don't mind the subjectivity. I'm subjective too, and we can talk about that. We've done a lot of that on these nine shows.
Yeah, but there's a bit of a contradiction, Bob, when you're saying to me, you want to know how you, Ben, can help the revolution.
Yes.
Without going to your subjective thing. But the subjective thing and this you're talking about are the same person. So
there we are. We're back to the old contradiction again.
Yeah.
Remember, Wyndham Lewis said two-ness, not oneness. I agree with that. Two-ness.
Well,
there's two of everything.
I'm
two-ness here, Ben.
Yeah, we definitely have. Bob and Ben are a two-ness.
That's right.
And a Scott Tunis.
What? Not Scott Tunis. No way.
No.
He ruined that 88 tour, if you want to take some view. We not all agree with that, but he ruined that. He kind of screwed it up, all right? But that tour, I mean, we stuck with Bob Dylan doing the Endless Tour, and because of Scott Tunis, we could have, if it wasn't for him, we'd have Frank Zappa doing the Endless Tour, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's big culture grievance that Dylan outlived Zappa, so he's going to become the great American poet in history. But what does it matter? Frank didn't care. We got the music. Forget it. Sorry I brought it up, Ben. Back to today. What is it? What is it about today we got to do? Do we have to do anything? We have to change the everybody's arguing nonsense. There's so much expressiveness going on and hypersubjectivity. It's great if you're into hypersubjectivity. What do you call MySpace, Facebook? What do you call Gamma?
What do I call Facebook? Every time I go on Facebook, I can't stand the gloopy friendliness of everything. You know? I think Facebook.
I don't go on Facebook. I'll
no, every time I've skimmed Facebook, I don't go into it because of this fact that it's gloopy friendliness. And I want to confront.
Listen, Ben, this is my experience with Facebook. Every day there's some new person saying they want to be my friend. I click on it, I confirm, I don't even check out who they are, and my name is popping up all over the place, and it's interlinked, and my foster daughter shows up in all these links all over the place. I'm amazed who my foster daughter has linked up with. But it's because we're all intertwined. That's my Facebook experience. Confirm, I'm your friend. On I go. anyways, back to community, Ben. Where are we going to find our community?
I'm going to find my community by other people who understand. I want to criticize the gloopy friendliness of
I'm with you, Ben. I'm
Facebook
community.
By the experience, the horrible experience of confronting a Wyndham Lewis abstract picture in a provincial art gallery in Britain. You're wandering around this place.
That happened recently?
Oh, it's happened again and again in my life. You know, you wander around this place with various pictures and sort of nice little statues, and then you look at this thing and you just go, your stomach goes, and you think, how can anyone construct anything as insulting and rude and ugly but weird and attractive and strange as that? And it's that experience that I want to inject into what I call media in the sense of a non-hierarchical, accessible area of human communications, that I'm not afraid of checking out the very high areas of academia or theory or difficult stuff. I'll go in there and, you know, but I have the idea that...
me too, Ben, but back
but I have the idea that... But while I'm doing that, I know I'm not doing what I really want to do.
which is to
posit something within the public forum, whatever it is, wherever it is.
Where is that?
Yeah.
TV, isn't that good enough for you?
No. Well, you want more. You know, you want to do, you want to argue your stuff in every way you can, anywhere you can. And also the amazing, brain-burstingly pleasurable experience I had when I heard I'm Pretty Vacant by the Sex Pistols in the chip shop in Cambridge when I was there, and I'm queuing up for chips, and suddenly something happened on the radio which made fun of the radio and made everybody like not there, they were there, but there was something going on that was not right and odd, and everybody had to take a position on it suddenly. Usually radio just bubbles on, you know. That experience of punk coming after, I mean, the Zappa experience was much more complicated. It was a real culture where you had to, you know, were you into Bob Dylan, the Grateful Dead, or Frank Zappa? Everybody listened to it all and argued and smoked dope, and it was all sort of complicated. When the punk thing came, that idea of an intervention in this mass communication, which said the truth and made fun of people and made people talk to each other, I love that, you know? So I'm a punk. I'm sorry, Bob, but I'm a punk. That's what I like.
Do you know I was the original punk? Do you know about that story, how in 1975 it was at CBGB's? Do you know about this?
Bob, you're not a punk.
I'm the punks that ever happened. But
I'm afraid, Bob, you're not a punk. You're a jackass.
No, I include that too. A punk is a jackass. Come on.
Right. Well, we've got to discuss this next week because we got to the 55 minutes that we can do. So goodbye, Bob.
Jackasses unite.